We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, sure. This is the organizational and special meeting of council of January 8th, 2018. We've had the Pledge of Allegiance. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Councilwoman Nancy E. Fellows.
Present.
Councilman David M. Fiebig.
Present.
Councilwoman Pat Gerbens.
Present.
Sorry. Councilman Christopher Hallam.
Present.
Councilwoman Janet R. Micah.
Present.
Councilman John Pleshnik.
Present.
And Councilwoman Laura Pismo.
Present.
The first order of business will be nominations for the President of Council.
Mr. Acting Law Director?
Yes.
I nominate Councilwoman Nancy Fellows to be Council President.
Second.
Are there any other nominations? I will now entertain a motion to close the nominations and cast a unanimous ballot for Nancy Fellows to be the President of Council.
So moved.
Is there a second to the motion?
Yes.
Second.
Any discussion? Will the clerk please call the roll?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Congratulations, Madam President. I yield the floor, or the chair, or whatever I'm yielding.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I sincerely appreciate you having faith in me to consider the leadership in this role. I've learned a lot the last 2 years, and I'll carry that with me as I continue to gain more knowledge as well. So I really appreciate that. So the next order of business would be the nomination of the Vice President of Council.
Madam President.
Councilman Fiebig.
I move to nominate Councilman John Pleshnik for Vice President of Council.
Second.
I have a nomination from Councilman Fiebig to nominate Vice President John, Councilman Fiebig. Oh, boy. I've got to do this again. To nominate John Pleshnik as Vice President. Are there any other nominations? I will close the nomination for Vice President. We really don't need to have a vote on this as long as John accepts the nomination.
Still, it's probably best to have a vote just to be safe.
All right. So I have a second from Councilman Fiebig, a motion from Councilman Fiebig, and a second from Councilwoman Pismo. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
John, you will carry on the Vice Presidency of the Council.
Thank you, Madam President. If I could just share, I'm very grateful for the confidence of my colleagues in me so that I can continue to serve as Vice President and assisting our Council President, Nancy Fellows, to move Willoughby Hills forward in a positive direction. And I'm also grateful to all my neighbors in Willoughby Hills who've given us all the chance to serve them here today. Thank you.
Thank you. The next order of business is a motion to appoint our Clerk of Council.
Madam President?
Vice President Pleshnik?
I would move to appoint Vicki Savage, our Clerk of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilman Fiebig to appoint Victoria Savage as our Clerk of Council. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Madam.
Councilman Hamill.
Do we need to waive residency before we vote or not?
You can.
We can.
Yeah, okay. I just couldn't remember how we did it.
We've done it. We've done it both ways.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure we did it right if we needed to beforehand.
Madam President, then I would withdraw my motion and restate it to appoint Vicki Savage, Clerk of Council, and waive the residency requirement for said position.
I'll second as amended.
Thank you. So I have a motion from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilman Fiebig to appoint Victoria Savage as Clerk of Council and waive her residency. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Madam President, if I could just say that in my 4 years on council, I could not have accomplished one-tenth of my work without the help of our council clerk, Vicki Savage. She has put in an enormous amount of time and effort to facilitate the legislation of every member of council, and I've never seen anyone more dedicated to the city of Willoughby Hills.
Anyone else? Vicki.
Fellows.
Yes.
Abig.
Yes.
Revins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plesnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Vicki, you are our clerk of council. Yes. Thank you. Our next order of business is to elect chairman for the standing committees of council. So the first one would be for the finance committee.
Madam President.
Go ahead.
Madam President, I'd like to nominate Councilman Plechnik to be chair of the finance committee.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilwoman Pismo and a second from Councilwoman Micah to nominate Vice President Plechnik for the chairman of the finance committee. And is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fabig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plechnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
So Vice President Plechnik will be the chair of the Standing Committee of the Finance.
Thank you, Madam President. As we all know, we'll be continuing our hard work and balancing the next year's budget, so expect several finance committee meetings in the near future to continue that task.
Thank you. The next meeting would be the Planning and Zoning Committee.
Madam President.
Vice President Plechnik.
Motion to appoint Councilwoman Pat Grebbins, chair of the Planning and Zoning Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plechnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to nominate Councilwoman Pat Grebbins to chair the Planning and Zoning Committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Abig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plechnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
So, Pat, you will be the chairwoman for the Planning and Zoning Commission. And in that position, you actually have a vote on the Planning and Zoning Commission. Councilman Hallam did this for the last 2 years. He would be a great resource for you on that, as well as the mayor, too. We also have an alternate that we should probably select for P&Z.
And I believe that's scheduled later under council representatives in the agenda.
Probably do it any place, really. It is. All right. Then we'll wait. The next one would be the Recreation Committee.
Madam President.
Vice President Plechnik.
Motion to appoint Councilman Chris Hallam, chair of the Recreation Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plechnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to appoint Councilman Hallam as the chairman for the Recreation Committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Abig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Sure. Yes.
Sure. Micah.
Yes.
Plechnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Councilman Hallam, you'll represent the Recreation Committee of Council. Thank you. The next one is Rules and Legislation.
Madam President.
Vice President Plechnik.
Motion to appoint our Council President, yourself, Nancy Fellows, Chair of the Rules and Legislation Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plechnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to appoint Nancy Fellows as the Chair of the Rules and Legislation Committee. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fabig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plechnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
I will serve as the Chair of the Rules and Legislation Committee. The next one is the Safety Committee.
Madam President.
Vice President Plechnik.
Motion to appoint Councilman Dave Fiebig, Chairman of the Safety Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plechnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to appoint Councilman Dave Fiebig as the Chair of the Safety Committee. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plechnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Dave, you will chair the Safety Committee of Council.
Gladly.
The next one is the Service Committee.
Madam President.
Vice President Plushnik.
Motion to appoint Councilman Dave Fiebig, Chairman of the Service Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plushnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to appoint Councilman Fiebig for the Chair of the Service Committee. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hollum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Maybe you will also serve as the Chair of the Service Committee. Thank you. The next one is Utilities.
Madam President, motion to appoint Councilwoman Janet Micah, Chairwoman of the Utilities Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plushnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to appoint Councilwoman Jan Micah to Chair the Utilities Committee. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hollum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Jan, you continue to serve as Chairwoman of Utilities. The next one is the Personal Relations Committee.
Madam President.
Mr. President Plushnik.
Motion to appoint Councilwoman Laura Pigemeau, Chairwoman of the Personnel Relations Committee of Council.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plushnik, a second from Councilwoman Micah to appoint Laura Pismo and Councilwoman Pismo as the chairwoman for the Personal Relations Committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hollum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Councilwoman Pismo, you will be the chairwoman of the Personal Relations Committee.
Madam President,
yes.
May I appoint my members to the Personnel Relations Committee this evening?
You may.
Okay, I would like to appoint Member Chris Delaney, Member Greg McCarthy, Laura Lenz, and John Plechnik.
Could you make that into a motion?
May I? I'd like to motion to appoint Chris Delaney, Greg McCarthy, Laura Lenz, and John Plechnik.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilwoman Pismo and a second from Vice President Plushnik to appoint the following members to the Personal Relations Committee: Chris Delaney, Greg McCarthy, Laura Lenz, and John Plushnik. Is there any discussion on the motion? Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
No.
Hollum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
The motion passes. Chris Delaney, Greg McCarthy, Laura Lenz, and John Plushnik are members of the Personal Relations Committee. The next order of business is council representatives. The first one is for the Sugar River Watershed Partners Trustee.
Madam President.
Councilman Fiebig.
Move that Councilwoman Jan Micah continue in that role.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilman Fiebig and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to appoint Councilwoman Jan Micah to continue as the Sugar River Watershed Partner Trustee. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hollum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Jan, we're delighted that you're going to continue to serve.
Thank you.
We do need to appoint an alternative.
Madam President.
Councilwoman Pismo.
No, sir.
Madam President, I'd like to appoint Dave Fiebig as the alternate trustee.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilwoman Micah and a second from Vice President Plushnik to appoint Councilman Dave Fiebig as the alternate trustee to the Chagrin River Watershed Partners. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hollum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Councilman Fiebig will be the alternative trustee to the Chagrin River Watershed Partners. The next would be the alternate member for the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Madam President.
Vice President Plushnik.
Motion to appoint Councilman Dave Fiebig the alternate member of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plushnik and a second from Councilwoman Micah to appoint Councilman Dave Fiebig as the alternate member of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Any discussion on that motion? Just for history, Pat, Dave has also served in the past on the Planning and Zoning Commission.
I think 6 years, I believe.
Okay, Vicki?
Fellows?
Yes.
Hebig?
Yes.
Ribbons?
Yes.
Hallam?
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Pleshnik?
Yes.
Pismo?
Yes.
Councilman Hebig has been appointed the alternate member of the Planning and Zoning Commission. The next order is the policies of council, and I think you all have a copy of them. There's not too many, so I'd like to at least go through them, see if there's any questions or concerns. So the last time that these were adopted, and I think we adopted them all as one instead of each one, and that was on January 4, 2016. The first one is Policy 1. The roll call of council will be rotated alphabetically for each council meeting. Policy 2, all council members shall be recorded by audio recording device and will be held in perpetuity and shall be part of the official records and minutes. Written minutes of council shall be shortened whenever possible.
Madam President, should we discuss each one as we kind of go through here?
Sure, we can discuss it now.
Regarding the first one, I think it just makes common sense so that the same person isn't always voting first, so that obviously seems like a good policy, and I see no objection to that. The second one that covers the issue of how are our meetings recorded and what is the public record, I would like to see our council clerk be part of the Public Records Commission so that she can advise and offer insight into that. The only thing would be the written minutes shall be shortened wherever possible. I think that's certainly subjective. I know in the last few years she has done an outstanding job of verbatim recording the minutes accurately, but it does take more time to do that. So just a little history on that. It said it was revised in 08. I don't know that there's any reason to change this because it is subjective, but I'd open the floor to any other comments on that, you know, if that should still continue to do it in that manner or not. My feeling is that, yes, we could leave this the way it is.
I'm not too comfortable with the written minutes of council shall be shortened whenever possible, because on the occasion where one of us may miss a meeting, then we rely on both the audio and the written minutes to catch up on everything. And it's actually, I think it's faster to go through written minutes than it is to sit and listen to the audio. So I really, that's something I've liked all along, is that we have an accurate written record of the minutes. Should there be any question or any need to go back and look?
Would you want to entertain a motion to delete that sentence? Or is there anything that the acting law director would advise us on?
Well, I don't know what shortened wherever possible means. It's been my view that they have been fairly comprehensive in their scope. And if it doesn't, if a stated policy of the council doesn't jibe with what your actual practice is, I would recommend that you change the policy, the question came out about putting the clerk on the records commission. I'm not seeing in your code where you have established a separate composition from what the state code provides for the records commission. Under state code, the mayor is on the records commission, the chief financial officer is on the records commission, and the chief legal officer is on the records commission, and then there is, I believe there's a citizen that's appointed by the mayor that should be on the records commission. If you wanted, and usually the clerk serves as the secretary of the commission, that's not uncommon, as she has significant knowledge in the area, but I don't know if you're holding meetings semi-annually as provided by the code. You have home rule authority that you could compose your records commission however you wish. However, since the clerk is one of the people who keeps the records, she is subject to review by the records commission as to how long to keep records. And so you'd be in the position of the oversight body containing somebody who is being
watched by the oversight mm-hmm. body. So you can do what you want, but I it's not usual that you see a clerk on the Records Commission.
So. Madam President, thank you for the explanation on that. That's a good point. Perhaps if she would be invited to attend the meetings, that she could offer some helpful insight and then have that one-on-one, because I don't believe she's been included even in the meeting. So I see your point about not having her on the commission, but perhaps she could at least be invited. And you're also your point is well taken about, as I said, it's a subjective sentence. Written minutes shall be shortened wherever possible. What does that mean? And if it's vague, how do you enforce a policy that's vague? Who decides wherever possible is? So I would make the motion to delete that sentence then if I have a majority of people that agree with that.
Right, right. I would second that.
So, quick question, sorry. Do we still need to have it in there that says they are to be written, or is that automatic if that sentence isn't there? Will the minutes still be written, or is that required, I guess is my question.
I would recommend that you have it writing.
Yeah. So I think we just need to change the sentence, maybe. That they will also be written.
Yeah.
Okay.
Leave it at that.
I would advise simply replacing the sentence that Councilman Fiebig suggested deleting with council minutes shall be written. So I would move to replace the last sentence of policy 2 with council minutes shall be written, period.
Well, I would also, I mean, it's implicit that you have minutes that are approved by council. You might want to consider expressly saying a draft of minutes shall be prepared for the approval of council, something mm-hmm. along those lines, or subject to the approval of council.
Council minutes shall be written and approved by council. How about that? Okay, I move to replace the second sentence of policy 2 with council minutes shall be written and approved by council.
Second.
Could I just throw one thing out before we... No, you already... Okay. Well, already second. Let's put it in discussion then.
Right.
I'll throw out another. Written minutes of council shall be available and approved by council. Written minutes of council shall be available.
I mean, I think it's implied that they would have to be available for council to approve them. Mm-hmm. And if they're written, they would be available. So I think that the shorter language encompasses the meaning that you mm-hmm. seek.
Say it again. Council?
Council minutes shall be written and approved by council.
Are they written by council?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Council minutes shall be written, comma, and approved by council, period. Are we happy now? Okay. So I would withdraw my motion and make the motion that the second sentence of policy 2 be replaced with council minutes shall be written, comma, and approved by council, period. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, so the last rendition was by Vice President Pleshnik and second by Councilwoman Pismo. So the policy shall read, or will read, all council meetings shall be recorded by audio recording device and will be held in perpetuity and shall be part of the official records and minutes. Council minutes shall be written, comma, and approved by council.
That's good.
Everybody's good?
Yeah, I think that's more concise and
okay.
Better than shortened whenever possible.
So, Vicki, let's vote on this one independently then, since we've amended it.
Well, this is just a motion to amend.
Right. Right. But I want to pull this one out. If the other ones don't have anything, we can do, because this one now has definite amendment to it. So let's do this one by itself. I think that's a good idea to do that independently.
But we would have to make a motion after this, just to be clear. This is a motion to amend.
Correct.
Yeah.
Motion to amend policy 2.
So we need to vote on that one first? Okay. Yep.
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
The motion to amend policy 2 has passed, and then we will use the verbiage that we just did with the motion by Vice President Plesnik and the second by Councilman Peasmore.
Madam President,
yes.
I would move to adopt policy 2 as amended.
Second.
Any discussion? Further discussion? Okay, Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Habig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hullum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Plesnik.
Yes.
Peasmo.
Yes.
So policy 2 has been amended, and then I know, Vicki, you will, but in, at the end then put revised with today's date. Thank you. The next one is policy 3. No legislation can be considered unless it is presented 48 hours in advance, except when such legislation meets the criteria as emergency legislation. This rule has no provision for suspension. Any discussion?
I just have a quick question. Do we actually have language that says this is the criteria for emergency?
Yes. In your code, you track state law that talks about, let me try to pull it up here. It's in your charter.
I just know we've waived 48 hours a few times.
I think that last sentence is problematic because in your ordinances, you have a waiver provision. And so what it appears has happened is you've, by policy, changed what the ordinance provides, which is highly unusual, and may not even be permitted because legislation has a certain process and overrides just policies of council. That your ordinance says any such legislation which has not been submitted at least 2 days prior to the meeting as herein provided shall only be acted upon by council at the meeting upon the affirmative vote of 5 members waiving this rule and consenting to consider legislation. This requirement is 48 hours unless you have an emergency clause provided. That's not in your statute. What I would recommend is either adopt the policy in your ordinance that says what the policy says, which would require the drafting legislation, or adopt as your policy what the ordinance provides.
So right now, our policy is actually more strict than our ordinance.
It's different.
It doesn't even say emergency. It just says period, right?
Well, if the legislation meets criteria as emergency legislation, it sounds like you're waiving the rule for emergency legislation. And then you say this rule has no provision for suspension. So if it's non-emergency and you introduce it, it gets introduced less than 48 hours before the meeting, you can't suspend the rule if it's not an emergency. If it is an emergency, the rule doesn't apply. And that just doesn't make any sense.
So as I recall, every 2 years we talk about this, and there's this long discussion about it, and everybody goes, well, let's just leave it because we can't figure it out.
What I would recommend is identify the policy that you want. If the general rule should be 48 hours in advance, as it says in your ordinances, well, all that I would recommend is change your policy to reflect what the ordinance already provides. Well,
Madam President, I just wonder if we already have an ordinance that deals with this issue, would it make sense to strike this and then deal with it in the ordinance if we don't like what the ordinance says? Would that make more sense?
No, it's in the ordinance. It's in 121.
Why do we need a policy of council if we have an ordinance? Maybe we should just strike this, and if we don't like it, like the policy in the ordinance, change the ordinance.
I would say you can certainly do that, and my point is you would want to have your policy and your ordinance sync up. If you feel you don't need the policy at all because the ordinance is sufficient, that's...
I think the reason that it's in a policy is because these are the things that sort of jump out at us that we are dealing with and experiencing at council meetings. So that's why it's kind of pulled forward.
Madam President? Nonetheless, I think it would be simpler to simply strike Policy 3 rather than trying to make it mirror an ordinance that would supersede it anyway. So while I don't disagree that it's important for us to be mindful of the 48-hour rule, a council rule can't modify an ordinance in the first place. So I would be in favor of simply not adopting Policy 3, as Councilwoman Pichmo suggests. And then we can revisit the ordinance to see if we agree with it, but I would leave the ordinance in its place, and I would just delete Policy 3.
Is that a motion?
I don't think. Do we have to make a motion if we're simply not adopting it?
Well, because we just voted down, right?
Well, you could make a motion to delete Policy 3 in its entirety.
Then I shall move to delete Policy 3 in its entirety.
Second.
So I have a motion from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to delete Policy 3 in its entirety. Any further discussion on that?
Well, Madam President, what
yes.
Was the section 121? Steve, do you have that up there?
It is 121.01.
Okay. I just wanted to review it real quick.
D. And it's at the bottom of the, there's a list of 1 through 18, which is your ordinary agenda items, and there's a paragraph at the end of that. It's the last sentence of that paragraph.
Any other discussion? Ready to vote?
121.01 is a
OND
pretty extensive section, and you know, dealing with all of these are the rules of council that are in place. And so going back to 1984 when this was put in place, I suspect it was because legislation was being offered that wasn't given 48 hours notice. So since that time, Vicki, can you correct me if I'm wrong? Since that time they passed legislation, see an ordinance in 1990
well,
that was passed.
It looks like your ordinance came in April of 84.
Mm-hmm.
This version of it was revised in 2016, but there's some inconsistency between what the policy from 84 says and what the ordinance says. It looks like the ordinance put in the waiver provision.
Yeah.
As a matter of ordinance. So, again, the policy choices that you wish to bind yourself to, you can do it by rule, and we'll get into in number 4, I have a different issue, but you can bind yourself by your own rules, or you can bind yourself by legislation. What I don't recommend is having contradictory regulations in two different places. So it should be synced up. And it seems if you're comfortable with the policy that's in the ordinance, that's fine. If you want to get rid of policy number 3 or incorporate it as the rule in the ordinance, that's fine too. It's up to you as to how you slice and dice your procedures.
Right now there's a motion on the floor, a motion up in a second to delete it.
So to delete it, may I just read the quick paragraph as to what is for the benefit of those listening?
Yes.
The failure of council to follow the above schedule of procedures shall not affect the validity of any legislation adopted by council. Council shall not be required to consider any legislation presented to it for passage at any meeting of council unless such legislation has been submitted to each member of council at least 2 days prior to the date of the meeting at which it was proposed to be considered. Any such legislation which has not been submitted at least 2 days prior to the meeting, as herein provided, shall only be acted upon by council at a meeting upon the affirmative vote of 5 members of council waiving this rule and consenting to consider such legislation. That's a more exacting.
And as I recall from that time period, there was a time when you elected your top vote getter in the at-large race was automatically the council president. And I think there was some dissent by a majority of council, which was having things brought to them by the council president at the time. And this was a protection of the I would say, minority, requiring a supermajority to approve legislation so that it doesn't get sprung upon council at the last second. Obviously, when you got rid of the selection by the electorate, direct election of your council president, I think this issue goes away as a practical matter.
Councilman George Krancic, I believe.
Could be. Could very well be.
Any other discussion?
In that case, I'd be in favor of dropping this this rule, since there's a concise section in our code for it.
Ready to vote? Vicki?
Fellows?
Yes.
Abig?
Yes.
Grebbins?
Yes.
Hallam?
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Plechnik?
Yes.
Pismo?
Yes.
Policy 3 has been deleted under the policies of council. The next one is policy 4. Notification of all new city employees shall be made in writing to the clerk of council's office within 72 hours of hiring.
I have an issue with this from a legal standpoint. If you are going to impose an obligation on the administration, it should be done by ordinance, not by council policy. Council policies are for the regulation of council only. And if you're saying that the administration needs to notify you of hirings, that needs to be passed as a piece of legislation.
Madam President?
Yes.
I agree with our acting law director, Steve Byron. Council rules cannot bind administration. I think it's wise to have this notification, and I would ask that the mayor continue to grant it, and that council should probably employ our clerk to draft an ordinance to replace it. But I would move to delete policy number 4 in its entirety, given that I agree that we can't bind administration through a council policy, and it's surplusage to have it in this place.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Plechnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to delete policy 4 in its entirety. Discussion on this.
Madam President, just to add also, I think council ought to be notified when someone was terminated or has resigned or is let go for any other reason, too. So that should be in the legislation.
I agree. Any other discussion? Vicki?
Fellows?
Yes.
Abig?
Yes.
Grebbins?
Yes.
Hallam?
Yes.
Micah?
Yes.
Plechnik?
Yes.
Pismo?
Yes.
Policy 4 has been deleted from the policies of council in its entirety. The next one is policy 5. Council shall not expend city funds for any charitable or philanthropic purpose. Any discussion? I will say that occasionally over the years, individuals have come to council as a body and has asked if we would donate to the cause, whatever it may be, and we cannot. As individuals, we can, but not as council members. Any other thoughts on that?
Madam President, I think it could also include any city resources as well as city funds, so it's clear that it's something that gets to the heart of council cannot be involved with a charitable or philanthropic purpose using city funds or city resources.
Again, you run into an issue. You have the authority to control the appropriation process, mm-hmm. and you can say it's your policy not to do that. Again, if you're going to be attempting to control administrative activity, you need to pass legislation. You can't say this, the city resources cannot be used for a purpose. It's the administration's determination of how resources are used.
Okay. All right, so it is simply that council cannot expend city funds for...
You're making the commitment. You could waive the policy and enact legislation that did it. You could follow the process to enact legislation. These are statements of intention, and I think you have a practice of not expending funds for that purpose. But it's something that you can point to and say when somebody says, "Can you fund the after prom or whatever?" You can say, "I'm sorry, we're not permitted to do that by our rule." But here's my personal donation.
Sure. I'm thinking maybe we should, because we didn't adopt one, and now we're down to five. Two was amended, and three and four were deleted. So why don't we continue to...
Yeah, maybe at the end of it, you just adopt all of them in a second.
Okay. All right. The next one is Policy 6, a reasonable opportunity to hear the public portion set forth in Chapter 107.08A shall be one time period of 3 minutes per person per meeting. Any discussion? So, Pat, just historically for you, many years ago, public portion individuals would come up and stand at the microphone for an hour or more. Council meetings were going till midnight. People would have notebooks that they prepared in between 2 weeks so that they could speak. It became lengthy, disruptive, and often not really providing any good outcomes to it. So back in 2008, council decided that the council decided that, and we have to have a public portion, but that we would put some parameters around it.
Yeah, there was an initiative petition that was passed in 2001 to require a public portion.
Madam President?
Yes.
I certainly support the current policy, but I also support the discretion that you always show to give residents the opportunity to speak when they're speaking in good faith, and sometimes they need a little extra time. This is a minimum guarantee, but sometimes a resident comes for the first and only time to share their unique problem, and I admire the fact that you give them the additional time, and I trust that you'll continue to do so.
I think that's important. It is. Because sometimes individuals come, they've never been to a council meeting, they have a concern, they don't know how the process works, and so... Yes, we've given residents consideration on that. Thank you. The next one is Policy 7. If any member of council in attendance at a council meeting or committee meeting fails to obey and or abide by the chair's ruling when one is ruled out of order more than twice at any given meeting, that disruptive behavior shall be grounds for expulsion from the meeting for the remainder of the meeting. The chair shall advise a member of the violation of this rule and the potential consequences after the second violation. A vote of council without debate for the expulsion shall be in order after the third violation is declared by the chair.
Madam President?
Yes.
I certainly support the policy as it's stated. It's necessary for running orderly meetings, but I would note that there's been a bit of a misconception that members of the public or staff or administration have the three strikes you're out rule. In reality, the chair of a council meeting could remove someone other than a member of council on their first violation. That's in the discretion of the chair. So the council members are given the special consideration of one, two, three to ensure that a lively debate is enabled, but there's a stricter standard for everyone other than the council members. We've had issues with former law directors, what have you, and sometimes we've had a member of the public who is very disruptive, and typically the council president has been very kind in giving them three strikes, but I do want to state that actually that's a privilege reserved for council members, and the chair of a committee meeting or the chair of a council meeting could remove a staff member or a member of the public for being disruptive on their first being ruled out of order.
Thank you.
That's true.
Any other thoughts or comments? The next one is Policy 8, to adopt the council seating arrangement identified City of Willoughby Hills Council Seating Arrangement. The last time it was revised was January 4, 2010, to serve as a seating arrangement for regular and special meetings of council and working committee of council. I would like to pass these out for consideration for our seating arrangement. Vicki, how many did you make? Some suggestions that have come through over the last month or so. was to bring council members closer together and have the administration individuals sit at the end of the table so that we didn't have the council members segregated. Also to alternate so that we would have at-large district. So these are some of the thoughts that came forward in terms of the seating arrangement. After you've had a moment to review them, if you'd like to have any kind of discussion or thoughts shared.
Madam President?
Vice President Pushman.
I will say that I've been to council meetings in many other cities, and it is more typical to group the administration together and the council together, at least in my experience, than to have them separated. Because there is a definite distinction between the two. I recognize the need to have the clerk and the law director on either side of the president because they work directly with the council president. I think it's a logical arrangement, and I would make a motion to adopt it.
Second.
So I have a motion from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilman Pismo to adopt the seating arrangement as distributed. Any discussion on this?
I would just indicate that you're talking about the arrangement that indicates revised January 8th, 2018. There's a note in the bottom left-hand corner so that everybody knows which one you're talking about.
Right, and it will be reflective in the policy as well.
Right.
Discussion? Vicki?
January 8th, 2018. Okay. Roll call?
Yes, please.
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grevins.
Yes.
Hullum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
The council seating arrangement presented will be adopted then January 8, 2018. The last one is Policy 9. The law director shall serve as council's advisory to the procedural rules for the conducting of council meetings and any other necessary procedures.
So, Madam President, this would leave policy number one, policy
5, 6, 7.
5, 6, 7, and 9.
Correct.
So I would make a motion to adopt policy number one, policy number six, policy
five.
Policy number 1, 5, 6, 7, and 9 as a group, unchanged.
Second.
I have a motion from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to adopt policies 1, 5, 6, 7, and 9 as they are identified here. Any discussion? Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grevins.
Yes.
Hullum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Policies 1, 5, 6, 7, and 9 have been adopted.
If you just want to clean it up, you might want to take a motion to number these consecutively.
Yeah. That's just common sense, isn't it?
I move to number the policies consecutively, given the deletions that we've made.
Second.
Unanimous.
I have a motion from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilwoman Micah to number the policies of council consecutively. Any discussion on the motion? Vicki?
Fellows.
Yes.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Grevins.
Yes.
Hullum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
The motion passes. The next order of business is public portion. This is an opportunity for the public to come forth. If you come forward, please state your name and your address. And we have 3 minutes. I will open public portion at 7:49 p.m. Linda?
Linda Fulton, 2990 Markham. I was talking with Chief Collins today in regards to the investigation of the property on Chardon Row that was for reflexology. And while he said that there was no investigation criminally but they did do an investigation. And upon investigating, the police department found that several of our codes were actually should have not permitted this business in the city. And so that brings up a question in my mind, is that they found that there are several codes that are pretty well outdated. So whose responsibility is it to investigate the codes that the city has and determine whether or not they're outdated, they need to be changed? Is it this body here in council? Is it administration? Is it both? But I would like to see that happen, because if our codes are outdated, even if we have home rule, it might not matter. So I would like to see that happen here in council. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Anyone else for public portion this evening? I will close public portion at 7:50 p.m. I don't know the answer to your question, Linda. We'd have to find out.
Well, obviously, the administration can introduce legislation, and council has the ability to propose legislation to change code provisions. I'm not familiar with any community that just goes through and looks at everything from the ground up. I mean, you have a provision in your code, if you're like everybody else, that prohibits the dying of chickens, because that's what's in the Ohio Revised Code, and it's prohibited by your code as well. I don't know that there's ever been an enforcement action brought by the city of Willow Hills because somebody died some chickens, but it's in there. And whether council or the administration believes there need to be changes, that's usually how they are addressed. And as you encounter issues within the administration of your code, or as a new problem develops, that's when council focuses its attention on that. So I don't know if that helps or not.
I guess what I would think then is that the council would need to ask Chief Collins in reference to the codes that were violated, and then we can work with the administration to review them and see if they need to be updated. I would think the mayor would have to answer that.
Yes, there is. And the term reflexology and massage are used independently, and maybe we just have to add words to our existing ordinance to take care of it.
All right. Next business this evening is legislation, ordinance number 2017-88. Vicki, will you read the caption, please?
An ordinance authorizing and directing the acting mayor and finance director to enter into an agreement with Joseph N. Gross and Benish Friedlander Kaplan and Aronoff LLP, a special counsel for the City of Willoughby Hills, for the purpose of representing the city in matters related to the formation of and negotiation with a certain collective bargaining unit, and to take such actions as are necessary to set aside that collective bargaining agreement if it is determined that municipal officials colluded with union representatives and or to pursue a claim of legal malpractice against the city's former law director, authorizing the council president to serve as acting mayor in order to administer the provisions of this ordinance, and declaring an emergency.
Madam President, I have a few questions about this ordinance. for instance, it said in there on whereas number 3, it says the council finds and determines that it was not properly advised by the former law director of the city for the city relative to the representation and negotiation aspects of the CBA. And I'm just trying to remember, I couldn't find anything, but I don't certainly haven't attended every single meeting, where we actually had a public meeting where we discussed any kind of facts or issues and certainly had any findings of or determinations of this. So what am I missing here? Where was that? Where does that come from?
If you want me to answer for the drafting of the legislation, I will do that. This contains a finding in it based upon issues that I have heard from the council president, and I believe other members of council can provide their own experience on this issue. This legislation would have the finding, and obviously you can vote no on it if you don't agree with either the action that it's taken or the preamble, and it's subject to amendment. So this is as initially drafted based upon my discussion with the council president in terms of achieving a result that is perceived necessary in order to protect the fiscal interests of the city.
Madam President?
Yes.
If I could share, our former law director never stated to me, and to my knowledge, he never stated to any member of council, that if we did not vote no on the union contract within 30 days, that there would be a legal argument that the contract was adopted. And I think that was a critical point that needed to be made to council. And in my personal view, sitting here as a council person, I view that as malpractice per se. It's such a serious issue that a union contract with terms that a supermajority, 6 members of council, voted no on. In fact, every member who is still here voted no on that contract, should have been advised by the law director that if you don't vote no within 30 days, there's an argument that this contract is adopted against the will of council and what council perceives to be the best interest of the city. I'm still flabbergasted that that was never shared with this body. I don't know whether the former law director simply didn't know and was trying to advise us on issues he wasn't confident in, or whether he affirmatively chose not to share, but he certainly never told me, and it's not in the records of any public meeting that he shared with council, that there would be that consequence to not acting within 30 days. I'm also very concerned that the law director never advised me, and to the best of my knowledge, never advised any of us, that there was a 15-day deadline to object to various members of the union, and I personally believe that he should have volunteered that several members of the union were probably not viable under Ohio public labor laws, the Ohio Revised Code, given that we had employees who answered directly to the executive, we had part-time employees who work very few hours. We had employees with significant supervisory responsibilities. At the very least, those issues should have been flagged, and at the very least, that 15-day deadline should have been highlighted, I frankly think repeatedly, but to my knowledge, it was never stated to me once, and I'm not aware of any council member who received that advice. I did not. So those two issues alone on those deadlines, I view as necessitating that whereas clause that we determined we were not properly advised, because I think council needed that information to act accordingly. And given the vote of council to reject the union contract 6-1, it's fairly clear what council would have done if it had been properly advised. It would have rejected the contract even sooner. Thank you.
Madam President, may I respond? First of all, I guess I'd like to – I remember, Mr. Mayor, wasn't there – there was something you sent in an email, if I recall, something about 30 days. I don't remember exactly the word. Do you have it?
Yes.
With you, that you could read that to me, and then I have one other response or one other comment. While you're looking that up, you got it?
I'll look for it.
Okay, while you're looking that up, my other comment is that as I interpreted or read from our ordinances and our charter was that while it would be nice if perhaps we know that there's a 15-day period to reject certain members, my understanding is it's the sole discretion of the mayor and not council to do that. Am I mistaken on how I understood that?
Yeah, I would say that the mayor cannot take an action which is not in accordance with the Ohio Revised Code. And if council later learns that such an action was taken, the proper remediation would be for council to enact an ordinance, such as this one, to force compliance with the Ohio Revised Code. The city should comply with the Ohio Revised Code.
Sure. And I did actually contact Mr. Lowe because I had a few questions about some of the things we were talking about. And one of the things he told me is that he, with regard to at least two employees that he had mentioned to me, Gloria Majeski and drawing a blank, our clerk of courts, that he had mentioned to the mayor that those two could be argued to be not included in the union. So I guess I'll kind of push that to you, Mr. Mayor, too, as well. Is that accurate?
On July 7th, I sent an email to Vicki telling her I would bring the ordinance the contract down, and I specifically said, please prepare legislation for the July 13th meeting. We have a 30-day timetable to vote on this ordinance. And I quote the ORC. Now, I emailed it to council, office, I CC'd me, and the law director. So you were given the notice.
So, Mr. Mayor, two questions. Number one, is anything in that email a statement of the consequence of not acting within 30 days?
It has the ORC.
Does the Ohio Revised Code is not legal advice from our law director, is it? You just cited a section without giving any quotes or statements?
I was very short, concise, and I said you have 30 days to act.
And the law director gave us no advice on your email?
I wouldn't know.
And what code section did you identify? What code section did you identify?
41.117-11.
Yeah, and that section is the section on, excuse me, I hit the wrong button.
Unfair labor practices.
It does not contain a time limit restriction. So if a person looked at 41.117-11, they would not get a 30-day restriction by looking at that code section that you identified. And you're not the law director. So this is a piece of legislation that is saying we don't know if there is an actionable malpractice action. We don't know if there was collusion in the enactment of that. This is an ordinance that authorizes the engagement of an attorney to investigate these issues and make a determination on whether or not the law has been followed and whether or not the city got competent legal advice. It does not ultimately, this ordinance does not bring the action. There would be a separate determination after appropriate investigation, as there always should be. You should have an appropriate investigation before you engage in litigation.
Mr. Byron?
Yes, sir.
It's my understanding that the Secretary's Union, of which Gloria Majeski's is a member, is brought yet another action trying to get the contract forced upon the city. Is that correct? There's a motion for reconsideration of some kind?
Yes, sir.
That's why I think this is a very time-sensitive ordinance. We need to hire a labor attorney who can advise counsel, who can address these issues professionally to defend the city's interest. I sincerely wish that the Secretary's Union was not suing the city of Willoughby Hills and requiring the expenditure of additional funds. It's a shame that this waste occurred. But since the city is in this position, we must defend its interests. I think it's our fiduciary duty as council people. So I would move to waive the three reading rule on ordinance number 2017-88, because I think we need to hire counsel immediately so that we no longer have this void of legal advice that we've had.
Madam President, I have a motion on the floor. I need a second.
Second.
Discussion. I have a motion from Vice President Plesnik and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to waive the three reading rule on ordinance 2017-88. Discussion on the motion.
Madam President. I know I'm a little late to the party on this, but I guess I feel like just the conversations we're having up here right now lead me to be even more confused. about this ordinance, and while I understand that there's an urgency for us to get the right council to do this, I think that there are a lot of components and whereas clauses here that don't speak to what you just stated about, you know, this potential new consideration. So I don't know if it's possible, and I know when you and I spoke earlier about procedure and how everything would work, but, you know, could we take this to a committee meeting of the Council of the Whole to discuss this further so that I can have the proper understanding of what we're talking about and so that there might be an opportunity for us to do this with more time to review things? I candidly would share, after receiving the letter from Mr. Germano, I was not really clear on who our acting law director was tonight. And that letter came on January 5th. So I really do feel like there's so many moving parts here. And in fairness to myself and to the public, I think it would be really helpful for us to do that.
Any other discussion?
Madam President.
The proper procedural motion would be a motion to refer to committee, and okay, you could make that motion.
I'd like to make the motion to refer to committee.
Okay, and you'd need a second.
I would second that.
Direct which committee it would go to?
To the...
Probably rules and legislation.
No, Council
it's
of
legislation.
The Whole.
Is you it? Could do that, Council of the
yeah,
Whole.
Yeah, I think that would make me more comfortable.
I would second that. I have a lot of questions still on this as well. I'm not comfortable. I think this seems very frivolous.
Committee that takes precedent over... Well...
I'm not sure it's in order to refer to committee until you suspend the three reading rule. Because the idea is you're going to be taking an action on the legislation. If the three reading rule is in effect, you're just supposed to read it. So your motion would come after a motion to suspend the rules would be adopted, if it were adopted.
So you'll have me with that.
You have to hold on.
So I have a motion on the floor from Vice President Pleshnik and a second from Councilman Pismo to waive the three reading rule on Ordinance 2017-88. Let me step back on this, too. So, you know, we're starting a new year, and we have a new council member. We really need to try to focus on what the motion is, because many times over the last couple years, when we make a motion to suspend the three reading rule, we end up in a discussion about the ordinance. That is not when we have the discussion about the ordinance. The discussion about the ordinance comes when there's an motion to adopt it.
Okay.
So this motion is to just suspend the three reading rule so that we can move forward to vote to whether we would adopt it or not. Any discussion on suspending the three reading rule?
Yes. Mr. Byron, why would we need to waive the three reading rule before deciding whether it might be? It seems to me you would want to put it in committee before you even waive the three reading rule, because shouldn't you discuss it before you even consider putting it to a vote to make sure everybody is comfortable? And that's when you should have all of the lively debate, as Mr. Fletcher said earlier, right, is in a council of the whole or some other committee meeting prior to it coming here for a vote.
You would be taking an action relative to the ordinance. When you have the three reading rule, that the sole purpose of the three readings is to have a reading. It is not in order for council to take an action on just a mere reading of it.
Right.
So if you suspend the three reading rule, it would then be an order for a member of council to say, I think it needs to go to committee. And that would be a disposition by this body to send it off to the committee.
Madam President and Acting Law Director Byron, there's been a development, you said, in regard to the litigation that this would give us legal counsel for?
Well, assuming that it ultimately gets enacted. You have pending litigation on a motion for reconsideration. If the motion were to be granted, you would need to have counsel in place, SEL counsel in place.
Correct.
To handle that.
And there's been a development in that recently that would it, in your opinion, for example, this is the second reading, the third being Thursday. Does that give us the ability, whether or not somebody agrees with the whereases or not, or the particular language? You could talk about the language of whereas, but that's not essentially what we're passing and what we're essentially doing is in Section 1 through 5, which is engaging the services of a competent legal team to represent the best interests of our residents in this particular matter. So does this 3 or 4 days here, does that help us and put us in a better situation?
Ultimately, council makes that determination. I believe that it does. I would recommend that you do it. Ultimately, you make the determination. And remember, the emergency clause is the thing that makes the ordinance effective immediately. The three-reading rule just allows you to, you know, move forward with it before the third reading.
Correct. And the mayor has to sign this, and he does have the ability to veto it.
Right.
And we have the ability to override it. That's the way council and the administration, that's the way city government works. So based on your advice, then, I would be in favor of suspending three readings and to move this forward, because it sounds like we do need competent legal professional opinion and counsel for this for the best interests of our residents.
Vicki, call a vote.
Fellows.
Yes.
Habig.
Yes.
Grevens.
No.
Hallam.
No.
Micah.
Yes.
Plushnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
The motion passes with 5 votes to waive the three-reading rule.
Madam President.
Madam President.
Councilwoman Grebbins has a motion that she wants to move forward at this time.
And I need help with that. I make a
motion to refer ordinance number 2017-88 to the
Council Committee
of the Whole.
And Councilman Hallam, you seconded it, correct?
Yes.
Thank
you. Any discussion on that motion?
Madam President, Councilwoman Grebbins expressed some concern as to who the acting law director is, and I just wanted to state for the record that ordinance 2017-70 was adopted by council, veto overridden by the mayor. It is the law of the city of Willoughby Hills unless or until a court or council sets it aside. And not only are we all bound to uphold the law of Willoughby Hills, lawyers take a special oath to uphold the laws of the state of Ohio, and lawyers who work for the city of Willoughby Hills take an added oath to uphold our laws here. And I want the record to reflect that out of grave concern for City Prosecutor Mike Germano, I put him on notice that 2017-70 was validly adopted by council. It has yet to be put to the side by a court or by council, and I advise him seriously to consult with our acting law director, Steve Byron, for his own legal protection, because I'm concerned about the ethical implications as well as the issues of malfeasance under the charter from an attorney who fails to keep their oath of office to uphold the law of Willoughby Hills. It's very clear that unless or until council or a court chooses to set aside that ordinance, Steve Byron is the acting law director. If that's not clear, none of the laws of Willoughby Hills are valid, and we're wasting our time sitting at this dais working together here. But I think it's fairly clear that since this was a municipality under home rule, that the ordinance of council is the law per Ohio law, per our charter, and our employees are bound to uphold it. So I would once again appeal to former Councilman Mike Germano to follow the laws of the city and to consult with our acting law director, Steve Byron, if he has any concerns. Thank you.
Any other discussion on this motion?
I would just like to agree with that we adopted 2017-70. The mayor vetoed it. We overrode the veto, which we are allowed to do. Therefore, it is on the books as a law of as an ordinance of the city of Willoughby Hills. And that is on the books. It is enforceable until or unless a court overrides it or this council decides to change it or repeal it.
Councilman Hamm.
Yeah, I I'm going to come back to this whereas statement because it does make a difference, Mr. Fiebig, in my opinion, that we are stating that these are the reasons why the rest of this is why we want to implement these sections 1 through 5. And as I don't think, in my opinion, saying that we found and determined something when it's, according to Mr. Byron, if I understood him correctly, it's basically just that's what people felt like or said to him. That doesn't sound like there was any real investigation on our part or any putting this together, because I still don't understand what people think that we weren't properly advised. There was there was a statement that said that we had 30 days to vote on it. If there was questions as to what would happen if we didn't, then I would think someone would ask our law director what happens if we don't.
Madam President, the Ohio Rules of Professional Responsibility require attorneys to advise their clients of pertinent dates that are very important to whatever they're looking for legal counsel for.
30 days.
That's not telling us why, and he didn't remind us. In fact, I was appointed on August 14th, and it was 24 days before the mayor or the law director discussed this issue with me. So it's 24 days. And that was the first time either one of them told me anything about it.
I would also add that the statement of 30 days was given to counsel by the mayor, not by the law director, so no one could imply that his statement was legal advice on the part of the former law director.
And I would like to know if the former law director appeared at any council meetings between the time that 30 days started ticking and the 30 days ended.
He wasn't invited to any, from what I saw.
Actually, he was.
We had special meetings. Correct me if I'm wrong. We had two or three special meetings in August, and I looked at those invitations, and our law director was not invited to any of those.
So the purpose of the special meeting was because Councilwoman Greer resigned, and council had 30 days to appoint a replacement. And we had numerous applications for that position, and we split them up in two meetings so that we could interview and have an executive session to determine who would replace that position. That's what the two special council meetings were for in August.
Wasn't there also a discussion about one of the ordinances, if I remember right, from reading the notes? I think you guys discussed 2017.
Because I'd have to go back. It's now January. I can't remember what I did yesterday.
I believe there was an ordinance also discussed at least one of the meetings.
So we have a motion on the floor from Councilwoman Grebbins and a second from Councilman Hallam to refer Ordinance 2017-88 to the Council Committee of the Whole. Vicki, please call the vote.
Fellows.
No.
Oops. Fabig.
No.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hallam.
Yes.
Micah.
No.
Plesnik.
No.
Pismo.
No.
The motion fails to have this put into the Council Committee meeting of the Whole. So we are back to now Ordinance 2017-88. I need a motion to adopt.
Madam President.
Councilman
motion Fiebig. To adopt Ordinance 2017-88.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilman Fiebig and a second from Councilwoman Pismo to adopt Ordinance Number 2017-88. Is there any further discussion?
Madam President, I would just repeat that at no time was I advised by the former law director that there was a 15-day deadline to object to employees who should not be part of the union under the Ohio Revised Code, and at no time was I advised by the law director about the 30-day deadline or the impact of not acting within 30 days. And it's my concern that that disadvantaged our residents severely, given that this relates to the infamous union contract with the 9% raises, tenure like public school teachers, cash uniform allowances, longevity pay, bonuses, and the like. It was just well beyond. And we've already seen some employees suggest 3% raises, the equivalent of 9% over 3 years. I'm concerned about what the other unions and non-union employees will be asking for going forward, given this remarkable attempt at making a precedent the city can't afford. And I'm looking forward to having competent legal advice to protect our residents' interests so that this contract never sees the light of day. Thank you.
Madam President. Councilman Plechnik, what do you think they're going to think about the raise we gave our council clerk, that we gave Debbie Semick, that we gave our acting law director? You don't think those are going to play any part in what these other unions are going to say? Of course it is. Of course it is. So why this? Why this? Why is this so specifically interesting and has an issue with you and these other things, spending money for attorneys for things that, you know, probably could have been resolved if we would have just sat down at a table with administration and tried to collaborate and work together instead of getting litigious?
We never had that opportunity.
Never tried.
Councilman Hallam.
Never tried, Mr. Fiebig.
No, we didn't.
Did you try to get
the
council together to do that, Mr. Hallam?
I'm not the one that has a problem with it.
Well, you voted against it.
I didn't like it. Correct, but I'm not the one that's trying to push all this other stuff through now.
So you think it's okay to bankrupt the city potentially?
Well, that's what it seems like we're working towards with all this legal stuff.
Madam President, if I may, and again, new girl. I just want to say it sounds like there are so many whereas clauses here that, again, don't necessarily apply to what I'm hearing the conversation pertain to. And again, with this idea that we don't know whether this contract is in play right now or if there is going to be something, I think we're speculating here. And I would just say that, you know, I can't in good conscience, and representing the residents of our city, say that I think it's a good idea to hire another legal team before we really know what the consequences are. I am sure that the state can look at this 6 months from now and still reverse it if we need to, but I feel like there's this urgency that, again, it's running away.
Madam President, protecting our city from bankruptcy is urgent. I think that's very important. And we had three separate attorneys tell us that that is the potential outcome should we have this contract in place. That is a grave concern of mine and hopefully all of ours. We don't want that to happen. I don't.
No, I understand. And clearly what I'm asking, Madam President, is just for a little bit more time for us to have some much-needed dialogue around this.
Madam President, two things. I think we would have all the time we need if the Secretary's Union would do the right thing and stop suing the city of Willoughby Hills. Unfortunately, they've chosen not to do that. They've taken the action to take a litigation stance that's against the city of Willoughby Hills, which I certainly am saddened by. It's impossible to give a raise to someone who you've just hired, so I want to say for the record that our acting law director, Steve Byron, has never received a raise. Our council clerk, as well as our police chief's administrative assistant, Debbie Semick, received the exact same raises as other employees had received in the non-union group. They're not part of a union, and they were simply receiving catch-ups. Our council clerk did not receive any raise when every other non-union employee received them in the previous round when the mayor had unilaterally granted them, and the legislation that gave Vicki Savage her raise simply caught her up to what the other employees had already received. So I want that stated for the record. Thank you.
One last thing. Mr. Byron, I hate to put you on the spot, but I have asked, this will be the third time I've asked, about what did it mean when the ruling came through and said that after 30 days, the contract was active. Is it the, have you been able to discern, is it the temporary or is it the permanent?
CERB did not order the implementation of the contract. They identified the statutory section, which is 4117.10, that says after 30 days, agreement is deemed effective as a matter of law. They did not implement, they did not order anything, they did not require a hearing of the unfair labor practice. So there is no answer to your question. It's in limbo.
It's in limbo. So that does not mean that when it says that it is in effect, we don't know what's in effect?
It wasn't ordered by CERB that it's in effect.
Okay. So the law does, but CERB also has to?
That there was a proceeding brought against the city saying it was not following the law.
Right.
CERB found no probable cause. So, as we sit here right now, there is not an order from CERB saying that the contract's in effect. And they're the final arbiter of the effectiveness of a contract.
Okay. So there isn't neither the temporary nor the permanent is in effect, to our understanding. Thank you.
Madam President. Oh, I'm sorry.
Councilman Mike, you've been quiet. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that just the confusion and the questions that are arising right now make it all the more clear to me that we need somebody to weed through this mess and straighten it out. Mr. Lobey, our former law director, had conveyed to us a number of times that he was the main negotiator between the union and the contract. I agree with the others that I was not individually or as a group advised of either the 15-day or the 30-day, the consequences of waiting more than 30 days until after that had passed. And then my recollection is over and over repeatedly, almost to the point where I felt like I was being threatened, we started hearing unfair labor practice, and this was a threat towards council that we would be hit with this unfair labor practice, and we were. And it's gone on. Mr. Byron just reported as to the status, which is limbo. Okay, so we may need the services. The other lawyers, all the lawyers that are here at the table, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Byron, but I believe it was recommended by all the lawyers that we need somebody very specific in labor relations, an attorney, to look at this situation because it is so complicated, and it's just as doctors specialize, so do lawyers. So we need somebody very versed in this type of law to take a look at this and make determinations, recommendations, and rulings.
That's correct.
I would just like to add that it is so complicated and it is so convoluted right now because of the lack of action on the part of the negotiators for the employer in this case.
Madam President?
Mayor.
All I can say is you just had to act and say no to it within 30 days. You didn't. All you had to do was say, no, we don't accept the contract. Would have been that easy. And we go back and negotiate with them again.
Madam President, if I could share, at the Personnel Relations Committee meeting of council, which was within the 30 days deadline, we asked the mayor, we directed him by unanimous vote of the Personnel Relations Committee to go back and renegotiate. And instead of telling us that if we didn't act within 30 days, the contract would be adopted, instead of receiving legal advice from our law director, who never spoke on the issue, he told us he would go back and renegotiate. And he did not touch base with us until after the 30 days passed. And I can't help but think, as the chair of Personnel Relations for 2 years, as a member for four, that Mr. Mayor, you knew about that deadline, you knew the consequences. I suspect that our law director knew too, and you chose not to tell us.
I told you you had to answer within 30 days.
I just want to know, so when it was first introduced, when this contract was first introduced, when was the 30 days, what meetings would have taken place? When would the third reading have happened? If we went through three readings, starting from the first meeting after the contract was put before council,
it would have been the first meeting in September because
you couldn't get three,
the other part of this convolution is that we were ready to leave for our August break that we've always done. It wasn't something we decided to do. We've always done August break. In 16 years I've been on council, yes, sometimes we've had meetings in August because we've needed them, but we don't meet in August. We don't have meetings in August, so I could stand to be corrected, but I would believe that the third reading would have been the first council meeting in September.
And I just want to ask also, so if we know that this council did not want the terms of this contract, why wouldn't they act in 30 days? Why wouldn't they? Just because?
Because you didn't want to.
Because we didn't know about it?
No, you knew about it.
But do we know the consequences of this 30 days that you said in passing?
You knew the consequences of not appointing you to the council in 30 days. It would mean I have the right to appoint.
But the ordinance that you referenced does not have a 30-day requirement to act on a proposed contract. So the consequences were not clear to anyone on council until the September 8th email that came. That was the first time you spoke to me at all about this contract and the 30-day requirement.
That's easy to say, but the Personnel Relations Committee had already said they absolutely thought we should go back, so why didn't we just vote on it, vote no, and be done with it? It could have all been handled, right? I mean, if we would have just come back and said, you know what? John comes back and says, Personnel Relations Committee says, this is out of line. We should not accept this. We vote no, and all of this would have been gone.
Don't you think if he knew, if Councilman Plechnik, the chair of the Personnel Relations Committee, knew that there was a 30-day deadline, that if it wasn't met, that this would be adopted automatically, that of course they would have waived three reading rule
and voted no? A 30-day period that we needed to vote within.
Why didn't you motion to waive the three reading rule then?
Because I wasn't at the August meetings, the special August meetings.
So why didn't you say something?
I wasn't there.
Why didn't you say something at the September 17th meeting or whatever day it was then when we voted on the contract?
This wasn't August. This was July.
Doesn't make sense.
This wasn't August, Chris. This was July.
I know, but August was, we left right after receiving it. And then meetings were held in August.
No, we had another meeting.
No, we didn't.
Madam President, if I may, the issue that's in front of council is the ordinance. The purpose of the ordinance is to engage legal counsel to do the investigation, to find out what the facts are, to find out if there was collusion between the administration and the union, and to establish whether there's a factual predicate for a legal malpractice action against the former law director. It's pretty clear sort of where the council is ending up on this. I don't think you're going to establish facts tonight. The record from the time period will be the basis of that. And so having a discussion of who did what to whom when doesn't address the issue that's in front of you, which is whether or not to vote.
Thank
for
you.
It's fair enough. Mr. Byron, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
So you, if I hear you correctly, CERB has basically said, has not said that the contract is even in place. What I think I understood you say. There is no, they've not officially said the contract is in place.
They identified the statute that,
right,
that has that 30-day requirement, mm-hmm, and they identified a prior ULP ruling, unfair labor practice ruling, where they found an unfair labor practice. They did not find probable cause, and they did not order further proceedings under the unfair labor practice.
So what are we – and this caption says two things. One is this caption says it's to set aside that collective bargaining agreement, which doesn't sound like there is anything to set aside. And two, it sounds like if they haven't officially – if CERB, as you say, has not officially said this is in place, why aren't we just going – why don't we just say just go back and negotiate it and see if we can get to where we want it to be and be done with this?
I think that if you do that, you're going to be in a position where you need to take action to negotiate, and this would engage somebody who would engage in it to do that activity. It is entirely possible that that may be the outcome of passing this legislation, is that there's an agreement to go back to the negotiating table and to get an agreement that council would find.
Why not just save ourselves all this money?
Because the purpose of this legislation is to identify all of the possible contingencies.
It seems like a witch hunt instead of just getting
a witch hunt.
I would say that
it sounds like a frivolous lawsuit instead of let's just go to work.
It's not authorizing the lawsuit, and certainly it would be a preferable outcome to avoid litigation. There's no question.
Absolutely, let's just go to work.
But it takes two to tango.
All right.
And as you'll recall, that the union has requested reconsideration of the CERB ruling. If CERB were to grant that motion, you would be in a position of having to defend the unfair labor practice, and this would put counsel in place for that purpose and allow this legal counsel, who is competent in the field, to deal with this type of issue.
Madam President, may I just ask Mr. Byron, do I recall correctly that in some of our discussions about this whole thing, that it was suggested that possibly or other cities do retain somebody in this capacity to do their union negotiations for them so that it does go smoothly and flawlessly and correctly? And then I think we tossed around the idea that this would be something, irregardless of the ULP, that this might be something going forward that we would like to do, that we would like to retain a labor relations specialist attorney of this type to do our negotiating within the city for the unions. Am I recalling this correctly?
It is not uncommon for special counsel to be hired for labor relations activities for a variety of reasons. One is the specialty of the area. The other is that the law director often has to interact with the members of the union, and it's sometimes awkward to have a negotiation where you're giving legal advice to somebody on one hand and then interacting with them in a union capacity in another. So it's not uncommon. It's policy choice as to whether or not you engage special counsel for that purpose. And I understand it's not been the practice here.
Over the years, we've been it's been shared with counsel by the mayor and the law director that they could be the negotiators and save money by not hiring a special counsel that had labor expertise.
Yes, in the past 12, 13 years ago, we chose not to hire Gary Johnson to do our negotiations. We said we can come up with a fair contract and we can split the money because we spent $50,000 to $75,000 on those on that negotiation every year. So we said, "Hey, union, we'll negotiate with you in good faith, but you have to be in good faith and accept what we offer." We've done that. We've saved a lot of money over the years, and that's why we have a 1.2, 1.4 million general fund. That things like that we did because when we started my administration in 2008, we had $20,000.
Excuse me, Mayor, we're getting off topic. We're getting off topic. We do have a motion on the floor to adopt Ordinance 2017-88, and I'd like to see Vicki take the roll call, please.
I'm sorry. Just one more question, Mr. Byron. The
you
cost
have to recognize
of
him,
having
President.
This, I'm sorry. May I just ask one last question? I promise I won't ask another one.
Yes.
Thank you. So, what is the typical? Is the typical cost for a person, a legal person, to handle this negotiation in this $50,000 range? Because my concern is, and the reason I'm asking the question, is that according to Mr. Berkcheck, our finance director, this contract with the, as is with the raises that are in there, not negotiated down at all, and everything that's in there, is about $50,000, going to cost us $50,000 above what they would get without the union. So over 3 years, for the whole 3 year period, yeah. So I'm just curious, are we going to net better having these guys do that? I mean, your experience.
It really depends. You could envision that there could be, if there were actionable malpractice, there could be a revenue source that offsets all costs. So that's certainly a consideration in all of this. So I can't give you an answer. It really depends upon what the factors are, how can the union contract be negotiated lower.
I didn't mean with regard to this. I meant if, as opposed to us hiring somebody to have done the negotiations from the beginning.
Oh.
Would it have been that? Is that pricing? Is that? Because I have no idea. You're an attorney. I would assume you would have at least a ballpark.
And it's, you know, each situation is unique. This is the formation of a new contract. I had a community that just negotiated a contract. It was not a new contract, but it was done for $12,000. So,
call the question, Madam Chair.
Question has been called. Vicki, please take the vote.
Somebody has to second that, and we have to vote on it.
The question has been called.
Right.
No more discussion.
Somebody has to second it, and then we have to vote on it. That's
you
the rule.
You did. We already seconded.
On a call for the question, it has to be voted on.
No.
Call for it's question not, means the call
president been, calls for the question. There was a motion and a second, and so the motion is properly in front of you. The chair has the ability to terminate the debate.
Well, we've done it two different ways, just so you know, Steve. We've done it where it's called a question and we do it, and then later on somebody found out information in our ordinances or charter that says.
Councilman Phoebe gave a motion to call the question. May I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion from Councilman Phoebe and a second from Councilman Pismo to call the question. Please call the vote.
Fellows.
Yes.
Phoebe.
Yes.
Grebbins.
No.
Hullum.
No.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Question's been called. There's a motion on the floor to adopt Ordinance 2017-88. Vicki, please call the roll.
Fellows.
Yes.
Phoebe.
Yes.
Grebbins.
No.
Hullum.
No.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
Ordinance 2017-88 has been adopted. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilman Phoebe, a second from Councilwoman Grebbins to adjourn. There's no discussion on the motion. Please vote.
Fellows.
Yes.
Hebig.
Yes.
Grebbins.
Yes.
Hullum.
Yes.
Micah.
Yes.
Pleshnik.
Yes.
Pismo.
Yes.
We're adjourning at 8:39 p.m. Thank you.